Hello, and welcome to today's reading of the Sioux City Journal. Today is Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. I am your reader, Martha Avery, and here is our first story from the front page. Lion Fountain roars back to former glory. Landmark is back in the neighborhood. Morningside Cecilia Park fixture returns after renovations. Sioux City. A staple of one of the Sioux City's public parks is back in roaring shape once again. Recently, the Lion Fountain in Sioux City's Cecilia Park was reinstalled in Morningside after a winter of being decommissioned for repainting and plumbing repairs. When they had time, Sioux City Parks and Recreation staff worked on revitalizing the bubbler, which was donated by the Sioux City Noon Lions Club and installed in April of 1983. Staffer Matt McWilliams put in a lion's share of the work for the most recent upgrade. "It took me about 3 weeks to paint it," McWilliams said. "Had to have dry time between coats. I installed the new drinking spigot on it, then reinstalled it back at its home. It was a fun little project." To keep things as authentic as possible, McWilliams tried to match the fresh paint to the original color. "When it was painted last time, it was a little different, so when I sanded it, I got to the original color and tried to match as well as we could," he said. The fountain has faced some challenges over the years. It's been stolen at least once, about a month after its installation, and has been restored several times. Sioux City Parks Superintendent Kelly Bach said there's not a set schedule for when the work is done. "It's on an as-needed basis and kind of depends on our weather. It's kind of like when you paint your home. You might get 5 years of good looks or you might get 10 years," Bach said. As for the first theft, the fountain was gone for about a day before it showed up on someone's back step in Morningside. The request to the judge in the case was a sentence of public service work in the Sioux City Parks. For folks in the neighborhood, the Lion Fountain has been something of a landmark. "When I was younger, my friends and I would play football there," Timothy Young said. "In my teens, we all knew where the Lion Fountain was so we could use that as a meeting place to get together and enjoy each other's time." Young saw McWilliams out with the lion and decided to make a tribute post of it of sorts on Facebook. "I knew a lot of my friends would appreciate seeing the work and dedication put into this memory that is in many of our lives and others who have visited the park," he said. In previous decades, Cecilia Park was a crucial point on the late-night route for teens looking for something to do. Young people from all over Sioux City and surrounding towns cruised the Avenue, circling Cecilia Park and heading back down the street, going east the Schroeder Morningside Branch Library and turning around at McDonald's or at the Super Value. The Journal reported in 1997, the park has been on city maps since 1909, and is named for Cecilia Jensen Jochimsen, the wife of the grocer Christian Jochimsen. Like other parks, it started as a private park that eventually was purchased by the city, Sioux City Public Museum Archives Manager Tom Munson said. The lion hasn't been the only animal to occupy Cecilia Park. In 1984, city staff installed duck, elephant, bee, pig, pelican, and frog playground equipment. Appropriately enough, that era's overhaul began with a pig raffle, which was used to help fund the planting of trees and the sowing of grass. Bach said he thinks it's important for pieces like the Lion Fountain to be kept in their best possible shape. "Well, that's kind of an iconic feature, and we want to keep it around as long as we can. If you say the lion drinking fountain. Most people know where that's at. Another front page article is titled, Bill to Reform AEAs Headed to Governor. State general funding for Iowa's K-12 public schools would increase by 2.5%. Beginning public teacher salaries would be boosted, and the funding and structure of Iowa's 9 area education agencies, AEAs, would be altered under sweeping education legislation that will soon be signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds. Iowa Senate Republicans approved the bill Tuesday, giving final legislative approval to a proposal that realizes, at least partially, a goal set out by Reynolds during her condition of the state address nearly 3 months ago. Shortly after Reynolds' office announced she will sign the bill into law Wednesday at the Iowa Capitol. Area education agencies oversee education of Iowa students with disabilities and offer media and consulting services to schools and students within their boundaries. The approval sends a strong message. Every Iowa student deserves a world-class education, and the compensation of every Iowa teacher should reflect the importance of their role, Reynolds said in a statement. Over the last several weeks, this bill has been the focus of much discussion and debate. Change is seldom easy, but it is necessary to achieve better results. Reforming the AEA system creates accountability, transparency, consistency, and most importantly, better outcomes for Iowa students. Only Republicans in the Iowa legislature voted in favor of the proposed legislation, and a few in each chamber voted against it. Democrats said they support the boost in teacher pay, but voted against the bill because of how it would alter area education agencies and because they believe the 2.5% increase to state funding to schools is too low. AEA changes. Currently, federal and state special education funding goes directly to the area education agencies, which provide support services to schools. AEAs also receive property tax funding for media services and other education services for schools. Under the bill, House File 2612, 10% of state funding at full implementation would remain with school districts for them to use how they see fit, while 90% would continue to be allocated directly to the AEAs. In the second year, all state funding for other education services and media services would go directly to schools, which could use that funding on AEA services or through another entity instead. The proposal also creates a division in the Iowa Department of Education. Up to 53 new full-time equivalent positions to provide oversight of special education services provided by the AEAs and establishes a task force to study AEA structure and funding and recommend future changes. The plan has drawn strong opposition from educators and parents of students with disabilities who worry it will hurt special education in the state. Most school superintendents also expressed opposition to the legislation, although some said they are in favor of having more control of their special education dollars. Public school funding. The 2.5% increase in state general funding for public school districts means an additional $119 million in the 2024-25 school year for a total of $3.8 billion, according to the state's nonpartisan legislative services agency. Subtitled Teacher Salaries. The minimum salary for first-year teachers in Iowa would increase from the current $33,500 to $47,500 in the 2024-25 school year, and around 50,000 the next year. And the minimum salary for teachers with at least 12 years of experience would be set at $60,000 in the upcoming school year and $62,000 the following year. The bill also includes $22 million in the upcoming school year and $23 million the next year to address other veteran teacher salaries, and $14 million to help boost the pay of educational support staff like paraeducators. And the third story on the front page is good news for students. Students spared. No added days at Sioux City schools due to winter weather. No school days will be added for Sioux City schools students due to weather cancellations this year. Teachers will have 2.5 additional work days after Memorial Day. The Sioux City School Board approved the schedule change unanimously during their regular meeting Monday. The Sioux City schools had 4 school days canceled due to inclement weather this year, Superintendent Rod Earlywine said. 3 of those days were student instructional days, and 1 was a teacher work day, which was already made up by the teachers. In 2022, the school district made a decision to start planning the school year based on hours instead of days. In Iowa, a school year must consist of either 180 days or 1,080 hours of instruction. Earlywine said this year the district had 1,132 planned instructional hours. With snow days, the district still has 30.5 hours over the state minimum. Students' last day would continue as is on the current calendar, and that would be May 23rd, Earlywine said. Teachers would have to regularly schedule work days on May. Teachers would have their regularly scheduled work days on May 24th. They would then have professional development days on May 28th and 29th, and a half day on May 30th to finish cleaning their classrooms. My recommendation is that then I would allow them to be dismissed on noon that day just as a reward and just the acknowledgement of thank you for your hard work, Earlywine said. Now, the House GOP passes income tax amendment. Iowans could get a direct vote on the state's income tax policy under a pair of constitutional amendments making their way through the legislature. On Tuesday, Iowa House Republicans passed a resolution to add an amendment to the Iowa Constitution requiring a 2/3 majority of the legislature to increase income taxes on individuals and corporations. The bill, House Joint Resolution 2006, passed the House 61-35 on a party-line vote. Another resolution in the Senate, which has advanced out of committee and is eligible for a vote in the full chamber, would require a flat individual income tax in the state, prohibiting a progressive tax system that imposes a higher rate on higher earners. Both chambers are expected to pass the resolution, said Representative Bobby Kaufman of Wilton, the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. The two initially started as one resolution, but Kaufman said they were split up to avoid confusion on the ballot. If approved by the voters, the amendments would enshrine Iowa's Republican tax-cutting agenda into the Constitution and make it far more difficult for future lawmakers to raise tax rates. The proposal will need to clear a few more hurdles to be added to the state's constitution. Constitutional amendments must be passed in multiple years by 2 separate general assemblies, and then they are placed on the ballot and subject to a popular vote. If the amendment gains majority approval from voters, it is added to the Constitution. This would be the first time the amendments pass the legislature. If they pass a second time, voters will likely see them on the ballot in 2026, Kaufman said. It requires a simple majority to pass on the ballot. Several top Republican decision-makers have set eliminating Iowa's income tax as a long-term goal. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said last year she hopes to reduce Iowa's income tax to zero by the end of her term, which ends in 2026. Subtitle: Amendment Sets High Bar for Tax Increases. The proposal passed by the House on Tuesday would require that two-thirds of the members in each chamber, 67 in the House and 34 in the Senate, agree on any legislation that increases Iowa's income tax on individuals or corporations. Democrats have been critical of Republican efforts to lower income taxes in recent years, saying their tax cuts disproportionately benefit the wealthy and do not do enough to lower costs and living expenses for low-income Iowans. Democrats argued on Tuesday that constraining the ability of the legislature to increase taxes could backfire if the state experiences an economic downturn and lawmakers are not able to quickly respond and raise revenues for vital services. Adam Zabner, a Democrat from Iowa City, said that if lawmakers are not able to raise income taxes when more revenue is needed, they will turn to other, more regressive taxes like a sales tax. Lower-income people spend a higher proportion of their income on sales tax than high earners. What this constitutional amendment does is to say next time there's a budget crunch, we're going to shift that burden onto the poorest Iowans, either by taking away services they rely on or increasing regressive taxes, Zabner said. Democrats also said the amendment elevated the short-term interests of Iowan Republicans without taking into account how the state could look in 50 or 100 years. The mark of a good lawmaker is having that long-term vision, because we've been selected by the people of Iowa not only to take care of today, but to take care of the generations that come after us, said Representative Austin Bass, a Democrat from Des Moines. More than a dozen other states require a supermajority to pass some tax increases. Kaufman pointed to Democratic-led states that have similar rules in place and said that they have fared well even with those with the restrictions. States have had those rules in place for decades and avoided consequences, Kaufman said. The sky did not fall. Every example of dystopian future did not happen, he said. There were no grave consequences. Subtitle: Flat Tax Amendment Also Being Considered. The resolution to require a flat tax rate in Iowa's Constitution passed out of the Senate Tax Policy Committee on March 20th with only Republican support. The bill is eligible for a vote in the full chamber. The resolution would require individual income taxes to be imposed at a single rate for all taxpayers. For now, Iowa has a progressive income tax system with brackets ranging from 4.4% to 5.7%. Under tax cuts Reynolds signed in 2022, the income tax will reach a flat 3.9%. for all earners of 2026. Republican lawmakers are likely to speed up that schedule this year, though no plan has been agreed to. Kaufman said they will likely set a flat tax rate that will take effect this year at a rate that keeps the state revenue stable. If we can get down to 3.9 this year, we will, but I suspect there's a chance that we'll be closer to 4 or 4.1, he said. Reynolds has proposed a bill to set a flat 3.65% income tax this year and lower it to 3.5% in 2025. Baltimore. Ship demolishes bridge. Six workers presumed dead after structure collapses in Maryland. A cargo ship lost power and rammed into a major bridge in Baltimore early Tuesday, destroying the span in a matter of seconds and plunging it into the river in a terrifying collapse that could disrupt a vital shipping port for months. Six people were missing and presumed dead. The ship's crew issued a Mayday call moments before the crash took down the Francis Scott Key Bridge, enabling authorities to limit vehicle traffic on the span, Maryland's governor said. The ship struck one of the bridge's supports, causing the structure to collapse. The vessel caught fire and thick black smoke billowed out of it. With the ship barreling towards the bridge at a very, very rapid speed, authorities had just enough time to stop cars from coming over the bridge, Maryland Governor Wes Moore said. These people are heroes, Moore said. They saved lives last night. The crash happened in the middle of the night, long before the busy morning commute on a bridge that stretches 1.6 miles was used by 2 million vehicles last year. The six people still unaccounted for were part of a construction crew filling potholes on the bridge, said Paul Wiedefeld, the state's transportation secretary. The senior executive at the company that employed the construction workers said Tuesday afternoon they were presumed dead given the water's depth and the length of the time since the crash. Jeffrey Pritzer, executive vice president of Bronner Builders, said the crew was working in the middle of the bridge when it came apart. No bodies have been recovered. This was so completely unforeseen, Pritzker said. We take such great pride in safety, and we have cones and signs and lights and barriers and flaggers, but we never foresaw that the bridge would collapse. Rescuers pulled two people out of the water. One person was treated at the hospital and discharged hours later. Multiple vehicles also went into the water, though authorities did not believe anyone was inside. A police dispatcher put out a call just before the collapse saying a ship had lost its steering and asked officers to stop all traffic, according to the Maryland Transportation Authority first responder radio traffic obtained from Broadcastify.com archive. The collapse is almost sure to create a logistical nightmare for months, if not years, along the East Coast, shutting down ship traffic at the Port of Baltimore, a major shipping hub. Now in our global section, European Union. Farmers confront authorities. Armed with manure and beets, protesters again block Brussels. Farmers threw beets, sprayed manure at police, and set hay alight Tuesday as hundreds of tractors again sealed off streets close to the European Union headquarters, where agricultural ministers sought to ease a crisis that led to months of protests across the 27-nation bloc. The farmers protested what they see as excessive red tape and unfair trading practices, as well as increased environmental measures and cheap imports from Ukraine. Let us make a living from our profession, read one billboard on a tractor blocking a main thoroughfare littered with potatoes, eggs, and manure. Police used tear gas and water cannons to keep farmers and some 250 tractors at bay, even as ministers met to push through measures meant to calm the crisis. Authorities asked commuters to stay out of Brussels and work from home as much as possible. Farmers, police, and firefighters had to nurse injuries that were not life-threatening. The government lambasted the farmers for failing to stop violent protesters who threw e-bikes off a bridge and set the entry to a subway station aflame. "The violence, arson, and destruction during the protests are unacceptable," said Interior Minister Annelies Verlinden, and insisted the guilty would be prosecuted. With protests taking place from Finland to Greece, Poland, and Ireland, the farmers already won concessions from the EU and national authorities, from a loosening of controls on farms to a weakening of pesticide and environmental rules. A major EU plan to better protect nature in the bloc and fight climate change was indefinitely postponed Monday, and underscoring how the protests have had a deep influence on politics. In order to have a strong Europe, there's a need for a strong agriculture. So we are here to remind them that their farmers should be a priority, said Belgian farmer Jolan Tarhey. "We are in favor of doing our best for the environment, but still, agriculture should be a priority." EU member states gave their provisional blessing Tuesday to proposals that amount to weakening or cutting rules in areas like crop rotation, soil cover protection, and tillage methods. Small farmers, representing about two-thirds of the workforce and the most active in the protest movement, will be exempt from some controls and penalties. From London, a UK court holds off Assange extradition. A British court ruled Tuesday that Julian Assange can't be extradited to the United States on espionage charges unless U.S. authorities guarantee he won't get the death penalty, a partial victory for the WikiLeaks founder in his legal battle over the site's publication of classified U.S. documents. Two high court judges said that they would grant Assange a new appeal unless U.S. authorities give further assurances within 3 weeks about what will happen to him. The judges said a hearing will be held May 20th if the U.S. makes those submissions. Assange will remain inside London's high-security Belmarsh prison, where he has spent the last 5 years. His supporters say he is a journalist protected by the First Amendment who exposed U.S. military wrongdoing in Iraq and Afghanistan. That was in the public interest. And a brief note on the U.S. economy. U.S. consumer confidence dipped to 104.7 in March from a revised 104.8 in February, as Americans wrestle with higher prices and feel less optimistic about the short-term future, business research group the Conference Board said on Tuesday. You are listening to the Sioux City Journal on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I am your reader, Martha Avery. If you have comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we will turn to some lighter news. Look at some sports. Iowa's Clark inspires next generation. This is from Arizona. Caitlin Clark makes pulling up from the midcourt logo look easy, routinely hitting shots most players would consider a heave. The Iowa star's deep range has expanded the scope of possibilities for up-and-coming women's basketball players, much the way NBA star Stephen Curry changed the men's game more than a decade ago. Guys will say the game is not as fun to watch, but Caitlin Clark is fun to watch, said Shea Ijewodi of the Arizona's top high school players and a Stanford commit. I think she's inspiring a lot of young kids my age, older, younger, that you can have that confidence and do it just as well as any guy could. Clark's ability to shoot three-pointers from mid-court logos at arenas across the country has changed the sport and the perception of it. The 6-foot senior from West Des Moines became Division I's all-time leading scorer this season. A three-pointer clinched it, a first-team All-American, and has filled up the record books during one of the best careers in women's college basketball history. Clark's reach has gone beyond the basketball court in the form of endorsement deals and fan interest, everyone wanting a part of the transcendent player. Young female players want some of her game, too. Clark shooting from well beyond the college three-point line, the NBA line for that matter, has been unlike anything seen in the women's game before. Combined with her confidence, court vision and awareness, work ethic and team-first mentality, Clark has set a standard that's hard for young players to miss. She's part of the dialogue when players are talking about a logo three or a great pass she made in the transition, an uncanny ability to answer the bell in the biggest moments, said Sue Phillips, coach of powerhouse Archbishop Mitty High School in California and USA Basketball. I think that really speaks to the innate ability as well as the time she's put in. And this just doesn't happen by accident. It's clear she's worked on her craft. Nearly every player in Division I basketball was the best on their team in high school. At the college level, the players are bigger, more athletic, so scoring doesn't come quite as easy. Clark has the scoring part down, but with the all-around game to go with it. She's a superb passer with a high basketball IQ, the type of player who seems to see things before they happen. Clark also isn't afraid to mix up on defense, set screens, and is an excellent rebounder, all things coaches can point to for younger players. It's a good model to show all the other girls coming up, like, hey, you don't have to just shoot 30 times a game, said Tony Darden, EYE's coach since second grade, who runs Darden Sports Skills Academy. You have to learn to do other things because when you get to that level, everybody else is going to be able to score just as good as you. How are you going to stand out? She, Clark, taking it to a different level. All off the basketball court as well. As Clark has become the face of women's basketball, her face is everywhere. She has lucrative NIL deals with Nike, Gatorade, Buick, and was featured in a State Farm commercial with Jimmy Butler and Reggie Miller. Some baseball. Braves' Strider looks dominant. Spencer Strider is one of baseball's most dominant pitchers. That's not enough for him. The Atlanta Braves' ace is looking to make things even tougher on anyone who steps up against him in 2024. Still miffed about the way last season ended with another loss to the Philadelphia Phillies in the NL Division Series, Strider spent spring training working on a curveball that could make his repertoire nastier than it is already. In sort of analyzing the way the season ended last year and the season as a whole, the outcome is that we are not, and myself in particular, we are not as good as we need to be to complete our ultimate goal of winning the World Series, Strider said. You start addressing that by improving where you can. One of the ways I could improve was to try to adopt this curveball. In the first full season as a starting pitcher, Strider certainly had plenty of reason to be proud of himself. He was baseball's lone 20-game winner, finished fourth in the NL Cy Young voting, and broke Hall of Famer John Smoltz's franchise record for strikeouts in a season by punching out 281 hitters. But Strider lost both starts in the NL Division Series against the rival Phillies, including the decisive Game 4 in raucous Philadelphia, where he surrendered 3 runs in 5 2/3 innings, all of them on solo homers. While his career record in the regular season is a dazzling 37-10, Strider has yet to win in the postseason, also getting roughed up by the Phillies in his lone start of 2022 NLDS. My job as a pitcher is to help us win games, win championships, he said. No one is giving you a trophy for winning 162 games. That's kind of the perspective I have, because this is a team sport. My job is to contribute to the collective goal of trying to win a team trophy. That's the World Series. Football? NFL owners approve kickoff overhaul. Change adopt setup used in NFL. Kickoff returns are returning to NFL. Team owners on Tuesday approved a new rule that will take what essentially had become a dead play and make it an integral part of the game again. We feel this is a great day for the NFL, said Saints special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi, who was heavily involved in creating the framework for the new hybrid kickoff. The major overhaul to special teams, which has been in the works for years, takes elements of the kickoff rules used in the XFL and tweaks them for use in the NFL beginning in 2024. The rule will be in play for one season on a trial basis and then be subject to renewal in 2025. NFL Competition Committee Chairman Rich McKay said the new rule passed by a 29-3 vote. There was a little fear of the unknown, McKay said. I think the optics are definitely the most drastic rule change we've seen. The thing that gives us all the comfort is we have the tape. We've seen it. We can show you the plays and you can see how this can play out. McKay said that there was urgency to vote on this rule before the draft because it would impact the way teams structure rosters. There were 1,970 touchbacks on kickoffs last season that now could be returns. There were 92 fair catches last season that are no longer allowed. Any ball caught in the field of play must be returned. The kickoff returners' value is going to skyrocket, Cowboys special teams coach John Fazel said. The NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, said he anticipates the league may have to tinker with the rule in the future, but considers it this a big improvement. I think it will bring the play back into relevant play, an important play, an exciting play, and I think we can do it where the injury rate will drop, Goodell said. For a standard kickoff, the ball would be kicked from the 35-yard line with the 10 kick coverage players lined up at the opposing 40, with 5 on each side of the field. The return team would have at least 9 blockers lined up in the setup zone between the 30 and 35-yard line, with at least 7 of those players touching the 35-yard line. There would be up to 2 returners allowed inside the 20. Only the kicker and 2 returners would be allowed to move until the ball hits the ground or was touched by a returner inside the 20. Any kick that reaches the end zone in the air can be returned, or the receiving team can opt for a touchback and possession at the 30. Any kick that reaches the end zone in the air and goes out of bounds or out of the end zone would result in a touchback at the 30. If a ball hits a returner or the ground before the end of end zone and goes into the end zone, a touchback would be at the 20, or the play could be returned. It's a drastic kind of move that's going to be way different, said Ravens coach John Harbaugh, a former special teams coordinator. Is that the right move at this time? I don't know. I think that that's to be determined. Under current rules, any touchback, or if a returner calls for a fair catch in a field of play, results in the receiving team getting the ball at its 25-yard line. The proposal needed 24 of 32 votes to pass. I'm all for it, Chiefs coach Andy Reid said. You have 2,000 dead plays. Nobody wants to see that. It'll add excitement and newness. In other rule changes, the owners voted to make two tweaks to instant replay. Replay can now be used to review whether the game clock expired before the snap, and also can correct an obvious error when a passer was ruled down by contact or out of bounds before throwing the ball. Previously, those plays have been ruled dead at the spot, but now can be changed with clear evidence. If the pass is caught or intercepted, it would be down at that spot with no advancement. If the pass was incomplete, that would stand. Now for a little lifestyle entertainment. The diamonds in the details. And you can see this man cleaning his wife's car at the Auto Salon Detail Center. As a guy who gets pooped at the mere thought of washing bird droppings off a car, I never figured I would wax poetic over my amazing ability to clean and wax my wife's wheels, but it turns out I am a gem. That is the expert opinion of the guy who not only owns a car wash, but knows all about gems because he used to work in a diamond mine. I met Edgar Barboza, proprietor of the Auto Salon Detail Center, after my wife Sue asked me to get rid of her silver sedan of foul feculence of a flock of flighty friends. We recently had some tree work done, including the removal of a large branch overhanging the driveway. This must have rankled the rocking robins that nested on that branch because they came back a few days later and unloaded whatever they had for lunch all over Sue's car. It was up to me to remove the raunchy remains. Unfortunately, they couldn't be taken off with the traditional cleaning combo of paper towels and Windex, so I drove to the car wash. You need a bath, Edgar exclaimed. So does the car, I replied. Auto Salon is not the kind of place where vehicles go through a conveyor and are machine sprayed with soap, buffed with huge rotating brushes, and rinsed off before being dried with powerful fans. We do everything by hand, said Edgar. On this day, those hands belong to Jose Cruz and Jorge Estrada, who let me lend a helping hand so I could be handed a compliment by Sue when she found out that my cleaning efforts weren't for the birds. I began by using a clay bar, a lubricated pad that removes dirt, grime, and yes, bird droppings. Go in a circular motion, Edgar instructed. Good job, said Jose, who had been in business for almost 30 years. Jorge, a relative newcomer with 7 years of experience, was impressed by my ability to hose off the lubricant without soaking myself to the skin. All three men were relieved when I didn't lose a finger while using an electric buffer to clean the floor pads of Sue's car. That machine can break your hand, Edgar warned. If it does, I told them, you can call me Lefty. I got high grades for using a chamois to polish Sue's trunk. I'm really taking a shine to this, I said. Edgar, who was very impressed with my handiwork, has a car that has seen better days. It's a 2004 Prius with 295,000 miles on it, said Edgar, who bought it 3 years ago for $2,000. It keeps going, he added, and my guys clean it. I don't have a girlfriend right now. The only reason to have a beautiful car is to impress the ladies. Edgar, who is 61, with three children and two grandchildren, has had many jobs over the year. His most memorable one was in Brazil. I was in the jungle, working in a diamond mine, he remembered. One of the guys brought up a diamond that was 326 carats. He said I could buy it for $775,000. I called my friends in the U.S. and asked them to send me money. The next day, somebody else bought the diamond when he sold it for $25 million. Do you have any more diamonds, I wondered. My wife would be interested. No, Edgar, but you did such a good job on her car that you could work here. Will you pay me enough to afford a diamond, he asked. You won't become a millionaire in this business, Edgar said, but if you save enough money, you can buy your wife a new car. Okay, so now on some nutrition. Ways you can stave off colorectal cancer. We may joke about the prep involved for colonoscopy, an exam for abnormal changes in the large intestine, but cancers of the colon or rectum are no laughing matter. In fact, when you combine the cancer death rates of men and women, colorectal cancer is now the second deadliest cancer in the United States, according to the American Cancer Society. Yet this disease is highly preventable, especially when we routinely submit to the screening procedure. Experts say the chances for survival from colorectal cancer are drastically increased if any problems are caught and treated early. Colorectal cancer is also highly preventable with a few changes in our eating and exercise habits. In 2018, the American Institute for Cancer Research published a report that outlined the latest research that links diet, nutrition, and physical activity with the development of colorectal cancer. These recommendations are based on what these experts report as strong and convincing evidence. 1. Keep your weight as close to a normal weight as possible. Excess body fat is one of the strongest factors that increases one's risk of colorectal cancer, says the American Institute of Cancer Research. 2. Be physically active at least 30 minutes a day or a total of 150 minutes a week. Any type of physical activity, including leisure time, housework, or formal exercise, goes a long way to help maintain a healthy weight. 3. Eat very little, if any, processed meat, that which is smoked, cured, salted, or otherwise preserved. This includes favorites like bacon and sausage. Research has shown that the more of these foods we eat, the greater one's risk for colorectal cancer. If you drink alcohol, limit yourself to no more than 2 drinks a day. What to drink? A 12-ounce can of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of 80-proof distilled spirits. Alcohol use is one of the top 3 controllable risk factors for cancer, behind smoking and obesity, say these experts. These recommendations are supported by evidence deemed probable but not convincing. Eat a diet rich in whole grains. While no exact amount is specified, it has been shown that eating these foods may help decrease one's risk for colorectal cancer. How? They contain substances with properties that fight off this type of cancer. Another, enjoy dairy foods like milk, cheese, and yogurt. Studies show that as an intake of these foods go up, the incidence of colorectal cancer goes down. Experts attribute this to the calcium and other properties of these foods that appear to protect the gut. Another, limit your intake of red meat, defined as beef, pork, lamb, and goat, to no more than 18 ounces, which is equivalent to 6 deck of card-sized servings per week. And lastly, of course, eat lots of fiber, containing plant foods like vegetables, fruits, legumes, and lentils. These foods are rich in nutrients and phytochemicals that help fight off the growth of cancer cells. Let's take a quick look at Siouxland's 5-day forecast. Today, not as cold with some sun. Wind is west-northwest, 7-14 miles per hour, with a high of 42 degrees. Tonight will be partly cloudy and cold, with a wind of southeast 4 to 8 miles per hour and 19 degrees. Thursday will be partly sunny and milder, wind south-southeast 7 to 14, with a high of 56 and a low of 38. Friday is much the same, but with a high of 65 and a low of 33. Saturday is cooler, wind from the north-northwest 8 to 16 miles an hour, with a high of 53 and a low of 34. And Sunday is cloudy with a shower, high of 53 and a low of 38. And now from Culture and Tradition, I'm going to read most of an article called Dutch Treat. Spring for Amish means popular mud sails. A couple hundred used buggies, horses not included, were lined up and ready for the auctioneer's gavel earlier this month when the day began at the Gordonville Mud Sale in Pennsylvania, an Amish tradition dating to the 1960s. Mud sales, country auctions that benefit volunteer fire departments across what the Amish community refers to the Lancaster Settlement, are popular in the area some 70 miles west of Philadelphia, where the devout Christian group began to settle about 300 years ago. They don't sell mud, though a cold rain brought plenty of it. The name refers to early spring, when wet fields have begun to thaw but may not be ready for the plow. Gordonsville Mud Sale, one of at least a dozen being held this spring in the region, drew thousands of bidders and was expected to net the fire department about $100,000, about 10% of the total proceeds. Amish people make and donate much of the food and sale items and are the buyers of most of the buggies and the array of horse-drawn farm equipment. They organize and run sales, often serving as auctioneers. Michael and Kristen Dean, a couple from Oxford, Pennsylvania, said they were enjoying a fun day of mixing with Amish people in hopes of finding a bargain on used fencing. The Deans are regulars at the Lancaster County Mud Sales and a week earlier had purchased a greenhouse at the Bart Township Fire Company Mud Sale in Quarryville. It's bigger than you think when you're trying to get it on a truck bed, Kristen Dean said. George Olivio drove about 90 minutes from his home in Rosenheim, New Jersey, to seek deals among the tools and hunting gear, as he carried chicken corn soup, horseradish, and shoe fly pie to his vehicle. Olivio recalled how the Amish people seemed less welcoming at his first Gordonville sale about 40 years ago. When I first started coming, they were very standoffish. Now most of them get pretty doggone friendly, Olivio said. Gideon Fisher, who chairs the Gordonville Mud Sale Committee, said that as more fellow Amish people have sought work off the farm, there's been a shift in interactions with others. He sees it as a good thing. You know, 50 years or 100 years ago, probably most of the Amish were farmers. And now today, there's a lot of them going out, roofing, construction, all kinds of other jobs, Fisher said. It's becoming more usual. We're mingling. The first mud sale was apparently held in 1965 by the Bart Township Fire Company, roughly 6 miles south of Gordonville, according to Steve Nolt, director of the Young Center for Anabaptist and Pietist Studies at nearby Elizabethtown College. Within about a decade, similar sales have sprung up in Gordonville, Farmersville, Strasburg, and the Gap. The social aspect of the event is unmistakable, with Amish adults greeting old friends warmly and discussing the price of milk and the relative merits of used scooters, rusty wagon parts, and fresh donuts. Clusters of children roam the grounds, some pulling wagons to help buyers move heavy goods to their cars, others swarming the stands selling candy and baseball cards. Near the fire hall were auctions of antiques, used furniture and plants, and mostly non-Amish bidders. About 400 quilts and a variety of books were auctioned off in the fire hall's main vehicle bay. Downstairs in the basement, Amish women were doing a brisk business in $2 hot dogs, $4 breakfast sandwiches, and seemingly every flavor of pie. In recent years, Gordonville sale has grossed more than $1 million. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Sioux City Journal. I am your reader, Martha Avery. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.